We'll hear argument next in number 2007-1257, Gamino against Southwestern Bell. Mr. Mullineau.
Hello, may it please the court. My name is Mark Mullineau. I represent John Gamino, the appellant here and patentee. We're going to ask the court to reverse the district court's decision of summary judgment, ask this court to hold there's no anticipation, and to return to the district court for trial. This is a de novo review on summary judgment. This case involves straightforward patents, ones that prevent fraudulent international phone calls. It was a billion-dollar problem for the industry back in the early 90s. Large companies like AT&T tried to solve this problem and could not. Mr. Gamino came in and solved the problem and has...
Counsel, what's your argument as to why Van Moore versus Walmart shouldn't apply? In particular, I'm focusing on the issue because I think you dispute the district court's determination to say... I'm not even going to construe the claims initially. I'm going to use your assertion of what the claims mean and their breadth, and I'm going to analyze anticipation under that assertion. Am I right that you dispute, the district court clearly did that. Am I right that you dispute the propriety of doing that?
No, I think it's okay to follow Van Moore. I mean, what Van Moore, what the court did is the court said, I'm not going to do a claim-by-claim analysis. I'm not going to do an element-by-element analysis. What I'm going to do is take a look at the 1991 prior art, compare it to the current blocking that's being put forth by Southwestern Bell, and if they're the same, I'm going to say that there is anticipation.
So is your argument then that they're not the same? Because on appeal, you seem to, I had a little trouble following it, but it seemed to me that you were arguing that he shouldn't have done this somehow. So I'm trying to figure out where the error is. Are you saying now that there is no error, that I misunderstood your argument on appeal?
I mean, to the extent he used Van Moore, and I apologize if the brief goes the other way, we are not saying that's the error. The error is what happened in 1991 is totally different than what happens today.
So you're saying that he shouldn't have applied Van Moore given that the prior art that he was looking at was not identical to the current product being offered, the current
Correct.
Service.
Correct.
How
I'm
does
saying
it differ?
It's not bad to use the Van Moore test.
How does it differ? Because the only difference I could find was the 10 versus the 101 in the first three-digit entry, and that was changed, of course, by the FCC with regard to international dialing codes, and it seems to me to be completely irrelevant to the patent claims.
No, the difference is there's many differences.
Well, great.
Back in 1991, the prior art was block 10XXX011. What I just said. Entitled is what's stating the entire prior art from 1991. And you know what that is? That is a problem. They wanted to block 10XXX011. The next question is, what's the solution? How do you fix this problem?
No. But how does that differ from the service that they offer now, which I understand to be block 101XXXX-011? So how does it differ?
Well,
other than the first three digits.
Well, they have answered interrogatories in which they say that they block based on reading the first plurality and based on reading the third plurality. And if the third plurality is the same as the 011, their predetermined digits, then that is considered, that's what they block. Back in 91, they didn't say that. Back in 91, they had never blocked a call.
Well, but then you're going into the argument that they really had enabled or practiced this blocking, but... Assume that they had. What's the difference? I had the same question that Judge Moore did. Are you predicating any of your argument put it this way, on the difference between 10XXX011 and 101XXXX011?
No.
Okay. So, given that we'll accept that those are functionally the same, what is it that was changed between 1991? Assume for a moment that we credit that the blocking practice was in existence as of May 31st, 1991. What changed between then and now that is material?
Well, I mean, whatever blocking progress might have been in place back in 1991, May of 1991, was not a... are you asking me to assume that it was the type of blocking that Gamino is covered by the Gamino patents?
Well, if it wasn't, what is it that makes it not covered by the Gamino patents?
Because back in 91, there was no how to do it. There were no predetermined digits. There was no take a look at the third plurality. Analyze the third plurality. Block at the third plurality in certain locations. That was not in existence back in 1991. One interesting thing that happened...
Are you saying that it wasn't enabled?
It was not enabled.
Okay. Let's assume it was enabled. Now, is there a difference?
Well, what they had back, they didn't have anything back in 1991, so there's a dramatic difference, yes.
I'm sorry, I missed what you said. What was it you said?
If you assume, I mean, what was really back in place in 1991, it's totally dramatic to what Gamino did. It also was non-existence back in 1991.
Okay, but assume that local and 1+ blocking did exist. I understand that your argument that the Texas PUC documents don't prove that it was actually in existence. I understand that. Assume it was. Assume we disagree with you on that. How does the local and the 1+ blocking service differ from their current services?
Well, you assume they have a local 1+ blocking. We assume that. What we don't know is how they block the calls. That's the whole problem here. Southwestern Bell tells you, we want to block 10XXX011 calls. That's like you saying to your spouse, oh, please block all calls 215-666-2222. Just go ahead and do that. If you don't tell the person how to do it, it's totally different.
We're back to enablement, right?
Well, I don't know if they're running together, but the question is, you know, tell me what about local 1+ blocking is different than today. Well, there is no local 1+ blocking back in 1991. It's not a matter of us taking a look at their formula for blocking calls. Well, it never existed back in 1991. Now, the one thing that I think is very interesting about this case is that if you take a look at something that happened in the real world, back in 1991, the Port Authority of New York and New Jersey had a terrible problem with international fraudulent calls. So bad that it ended up spreading crime throughout the whole Port Authority. They brought in companies like AT&T, Sprint, MCI, and said, gentlemen, fix this problem. It's a major problem.
Counsel, in the record on page 777, at the top of the record, the 777 of the appendix, at the top it says existing, and then right under it it says local and 1+ blocking option.
Mm-hmm.
Do you see that?
Yes.
So this is the Texas PUC order, and again on page 768 it talks about the local and 1+ blocking option, at least as early is January of 1991. I'm just trying to, I mean, it has the word blocked. I'm trying to understand how you say it doesn't exist, because these documents actually have the words existing on them.
Oh,
and they talk about the 1+ and local blocking.
I acknowledge these documents exist. What did not exist, so we have no proof of it, is Southwestern Bell being out there and providing blocking or offering blocking based on these services. There's no proof of it.
Well, I don't understand. It says existing in the document. Why doesn't that mean that this service exists?
Because we asked them for proof to show that they actually blocked, and we got nothing.
Why isn't this document the proof?
Because this is something that gets filed with the FCC. They're saying that they're going to block these type of
calls.
No,
they don't say they're going to block it. They say that service is existing at the top of the document.
Well, it's true these things were filed. It's true they said what they did to the FCC, but they weren't blocking calls that way. And it's
okay, but here, what evidence did you proffer to contradict this document, which is evidence on its face that it exists? So you're saying the documents aren't to be believed. So why? What evidence did you produce?
They might have been blocking calls. Based on the documents you just pointed out to me, they weren't blocking them based upon reading the third priority and predetermined digits. They may have been blocking calls back in 1991. That's not part of the case. The case is there is no proof they were blocking calls based on the Gamino invention.
Okay, wasn't that Mr. Tomasi's testimony to that effect?
Well, Mr. Tomasi, one of the elements and that's a very good question, one of the elements that's blatantly missing is that for Southwestern Bell to do it like Gamino, they have to block based upon the third plurality.
Let's look at page 768, please. Do you see on page 768, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 from the bottom? Okay, it's telling you what does get blocked and what doesn't get blocked. What doesn't get blocked is 10XXX01. And then you look across, it says not blocked. ICOPR goes to the operator, so it's not blocked. Then you look at the very next line, 10XXX011. There is no difference between those two numbers except the last three digits. And then you look across that column and it says blocked. How could they possibly be excluding the second and not excluding the first if it wasn't focusing on the last three digits? There is no other difference between those two numbers.
Well, no, we don't know how they're doing it. We've asked them questions. You can block these based on country codes, city codes, line codes. There's many different ways to block these things.
No. None of those. There's no difference between those that are listed here. No difference. It tells you what it's going to block and what it's not going to block. And the only difference, I assume what the XXX means is it could be anything. And it could be the same thing in both. The only difference is the 01 and the 011. How is it not evidence that it's blocking based on the third?
It's just not evidence based on blocking the third party. That is not enough. You have to come out and stay how you block. Take a look at Gamino's product. The big thing about Gamino's product is called the predetermined digits.
Why do they
have user to... The user of the invention can go out. I'm sorry.
Go ahead. No, it's okay. Go ahead.
I was going to say, the user of the invention, one thing that's missing from Southwestern Bell, the user of the invention makes a decision. I'm going to decide to block one type of call, two types, five types, 20 types, 25. I'm going to decide to block all calls. That is not based in here. They have to have all the elements of the Gamino invention.
But they're not blocking all calls. Look, they're blocking only the ones based on the third digit, the third plurality of digits being 011 in this case. Why isn't this evidence that their product is doing exactly this?
Well, the evidence is they're saying they can block these calls. They're not telling you how you're doing.
That's a question of enablement then. You're saying the issue is this prior art reference doesn't enable for anticipation purposes. Is that what you're saying?
This prior art does not have the elements of Gamino's claims. One example.
Sure, it does. It shows the ability of the system to block based on the third plurality.
But it does not say anything about predetermined digits. It does not talk about looking at the first plurality. There's no prior on the first plurality. Every claim that has a blocking based on the first plurality gets over anticipation is a matter of course. The Southwestern Bell is not claiming they have a blocking of Gamino's patent based upon reading the first plurality and third plurality. Southwestern Bell has not asserted at all we have prior art based on the first plurality, and we have a number of claims based on the first plurality. That, as a matter of course, that has to be overturned. I think there's no doubt about that. The one thing of what happened in this case that I think is great background is AT&T, back in April of 1991, they said the exact same things that Southwestern Bell did, and they did it the same way. They just listed things. We can block 10XXX011. Which is the exact same prior art before us right now. AT&T goes to the Port Authority, and I'm talking about failed. They failed so bad they couldn't solve the problem. They said to the Port Authority, there is no technical solution. Gamino comes in, he looks at it, he solves it. He was the hero. He stopped all the crime at the Port Authority because he invented the Gamino invention. Just like Southwestern Bell, AT&T could go around all day and say, we block 10XXX011. And they did say it all day. You know why? Because the FCC wanted to do it. Did they ever go out and really do it prior to the Gamino Convention? Absolutely not. You can look through the record all day long and find no. You won't find one call that they ever blocked. You won't find one customer that bought this service. You won't find one invoice for this service. They had to admit the regulators happened, so they did, so they put it on paper. Is that proof that they had Gamino's, the elements of Gamino's inventions? Absolutely not. AT&T had the exact same prior art and failed miserably. Admitted, geez, there is no technical solution.
Now, Mr. Tomasi, you were going to talk about Mr.
Tomasi. Oh, I'm sorry. Thank you very much. Mr. Tomasi is an interested witness. He worked for SWB, still does work for SWB.
Let's set aside the question of whether he's somehow impeached by his interest, but just his testimony in and of itself. Is there some flaw in the testimony that in some regard in which that fails to establish that they were capable of doing this third plurality blocking at the time?
Well, as you know, strongly we think that's inadmissible. And
I understand. But given passing that.
I think Tomasi gives them some evidence in their favor, but doesn't get them there. I mean, he gives
Where does he fall short? In
he
what
says
he
nothing
says.
Nothing about predetermined digits. The way this patent operates is the user says, I'm going to decide, I'm going to block this type of call, not that type of call. That is a very important feature, extremely important feature.
Okay.
So, I say I used all 15. I'd say
you have. On the other hand, we've questioned you heavily, so we'll give you your rebuttal time back.
Okay. Thank you.
Very well. Thank you, Mr. Paul.
Good morning. May it please the court, my name is Roger Fulgham. I represent Southwestern Bell. I'm happy to answer any questions. I do have a few prepared remarks as well. First, with respect to local and OnePlus blocking, that issue was raised during the opening arguments. That service is the same today as it was on May 31st, 1991. May 31st, 1991, that service was offered for sale through the tariff. The price on that day was $23.10. Today, it is still on the tariff at the price of $18.85.
So what I understand the logical conclusion of that argument to be, that they're accusing local and OnePlus under Van Moore, the first digits off the table, the predetermined off the table, because the service existed then, it was prior art, the service exists now. Is that part of
the
argument?
That's what he has directed his infringement case at. His infringement case is directed at call blocking of 101XXXX011+. So we know that's the case. That is exactly what local and OnePlus does. It looks at the 101, and it looks at the 011, and blocks the call on that basis.
What is there evidence that it looks at the first three digits?
You have to look at the first three digits to know where the second set of digits are, and to know where the third set of digits are. So you have to look at the...
Well, you have to make sure there are digits there.
Three digits.
You have to look at the numbers.
You have to look at the numbers. For example, the numbers come across, and if the first number is first three numbers of 101, then you say to yourself, okay, the next four numbers are going to be my carrier identification code, and I need to go out to the fifth following number. And beginning with that fifth following number, if it is 011, then I want to block that call. If I don't, that call is going to be charged to the phone that originates the call.
So the number in the second plurality varies according to the particular digits that are in the first plurality?
No. The number in the second plurality...
I mean, when I say the number, I mean the number of digits in the second plurality.
Yeah, that's right.
All right.
The number of digits,
that's what I understood you to say.
The number of digits in the second plurality varies according to what's in the first plurality.
Right.
Here's an example of that. Let's suppose the first plurality is 1-800. If 1-800 is the first plurality, there will be seven digits that follow. And then you will get to your third plurality. For example, 1-800-321-0288 is the access code to make an international call through AT&T, to make any long-distance call through AT&T. So if I go to a payphone and I dial 1-800-321-0288...
Is that call AT&T?
Call AT&T. Dial down the center. Remember, carrot top? 1-800-321-0288. And the next three digits are 011. That call's going to be blocked. That's how the first, second, and third series of digits sets up. And the court is correct. That is explained here in the dialing plan. The dialing plans, one is dated June 1990 at APP 769, another dated January 1991 at APP 768. Those show the blocking of the 101XXXX011 plus variety of calls based upon the third series of digits.
Now, your opposing counsel says, well, that's what they said on the piece of paper, but where's the evidence that they could actually do it?
Well, what more proof do you need? I mean, this is documentary evidence of the dialing plan and the way the dialing plan worked at that time. In addition, we have a tariff that was approved by the Public Utility Commission of Texas. Southwestern Bell Telephone is a regulated entity, and so for that reason, it has to apply to offer service to customers. It filed an application with the Public Utility Commission of Texas. It was approved, and as of May 31st, 1991, the service was approved and therefore offered for sale. Southwestern Bell cannot, as a company, tariff services that it cannot provide. Mm-hmm. And so when the service is tariffed, as Ms. Bradley testified to, it has to be available. And Mr. Tomasi testified that service was implemented as of May 31st, 1991.
Did he testify as to the details of the operation of the service? My recollection is that he did.
I think that he did as well. I mean, he testified along the same lines that I just spoke about.
Right. Okay.
The way of handling of the first set, the middle set, and then the third set. The blocking, in order to block an international call, you really have to go to the third set. Mm-hmm. Because only there do you distinguish between international calls and domestic calls. And as Judge Moore noticed, only there do you also distinguish between direct dialed international calls, which is the 011 variety, and operator-assisted international calls, which is the 01 plus variety.
You know, I don't have a problem with 768 showing that it's going to block based on the third plurality, but 768 doesn't tell us how it's going to do that, and doesn't anticipatory prior art have to enable?
Not in this case, and I'll tell you why, because this is an offer for sale. This product was offered for sale, the service was offered to pay phone customers, and that's what's shown in the tariff. The local 01 plus blocking is a service that was provided to customers.
Well, doesn't it still have to be ready for patenting?
It was, in fact, ready for patenting. Ready for patenting in a couple of ways. First, it was, in fact, reduced to practice. We know that first through the testimony of Mr. Tomasi. We know that through all of his documentary evidence, which includes not only the pre-existing dialing plans, it also includes the government tariff itself, and it also includes, what was it, 777. 777 is interesting because it is in a document.
Wait a minute. But these documents, your point, look, reduced to ready for patenting can be proven in one of two ways, right? It can be proven by actual reduction of practice, and you're saying Tomasi says it was.
Correct.
Okay. Well, suppose that there was some problem with his testimony, because certainly that's disputed, then you said it can also be shown by these documents. Well, from FAFT, it's clear that in order for a document to substantiate ready for patentability, it has to be an enabling disclosure.
Right.
So how do these documents enable the practice of identification and blocking based on the third plurality?
A person of ordinary skill, looking at that dialing plan, could program a switch to block those calls. Because that person would know, and Mr. Tomasi testified to this, that person would know what calls to allow, what calls to block. At this time, the art of call screening, the art of call identification, was well developed. Also at this time, and Mr. Gamino, I think, identifies that in his patent, Mr. Gamino is not claiming call screening, and that is in the background. Identifying digits and identifying the digits that come across and making decisions on the basis of those digits, that was well known, well established. In addition, this involves local and 1 plus blocking was implemented on the new digital switches. So in the early 1990s, there was a transition from older analog switches, which had less features and were less flexible, to newer digital switches. So a person of ordinary skill, like Mr. Tomasi, who calls himself a switch translations person, he would be able to put into the switch the necessary hooks to make the call go as you want it to go. He has testified, I could block a call any number of ways. You tell me what numbers you want me to block, I'll block it. That's how flexible these switches are, and that's how knowledgeable he is in person of ordinary skill.
Is his testimony necessary for us to reach the conclusion that the disclosed services were enabled? Because each time you say reduced practice, you see Tomasi, and then when we talked about whether or not the documents themselves show ready for patenting apart from the reduction of practice, you say Tomasi tells us they do because one of ordinary skill in the art. I'm just wondering if there's a way around Tomasi's testimony. Is there? I mean, if not, that's okay.
Here's another way to look at it. The identification of the calls to block, the calls to allow, is really, and the identification of those numbers, is about the same as what Gamino provides in his own application. In his own application, in his own patents, the 125 and 650, he identifies the calls he's going to block. And what separates those two? Not much, if anything. Mr. Gamino recognized that certain dialing sequences needed to be blocked to prevent fraud, and he identified those dialing sequences in his own patent. Here, we have the same sort of disclosure in these Southwestern Bell documents that are well before the critical date.
So you say, if I read between the lines of what you're saying, is that it's not as if Mr. Gamino came up with some very clever electronic mechanism for blocking that no one could possibly have come up with before and that no one did come up with before. That what you sounds to me as if you're saying is that once you see the numbers you want blocked, then the blocking is trivial to a person of skill in the art.
That's
it's
right.
Just a matter of picking the numbers, and as soon as you pick the third plurality, you're done.
That's right. What we have here in this patent, what we have here in these documents, is algorithmic. You're looking at, Mr. Gamino developed an algorithm to block international calls by going out to the third series of digits.
Well, when you say developed an algorithm, I mean, what I took you to be saying is anyone of skill in the art would have intuitively known immediately how to do that.
Yes, that's right.
There was nothing about, when you say he developed an algorithm,
well,
that begins to say, you're not really arguing that he made an inventive contribution through the algorithm, are you?
No, what he really did is he recognized what calls to block. He recognized, just as you stated earlier, he recognized what calls to block by going out to that third plurality,
right,
which allowed him to distinguish between calls that had to be allowed at that time, domestic calls, and international calls, which could be blocked.
But that recognition is one which everyone who ever makes an international call recognizes, right?
Yes, if you make an international call, the third digits are recognized.
You know country code or whatever it is? And
yeah,
that's
country code follows typically the third series of digits.
But the third series is one that you dial in. No, well, I guess you don't necessarily know that that's international, but it wouldn't take a genius to figure it out, I suppose.
011, 01, at that time in 1991, were both codes that were used for international dial. Yes,
right.
Well,
so you would be told, dial the following numbers, and then dial 01, and then dial the country code.
Correct.
Okay.
I should say a few words about non-infringement. We also have a ruling, a holding of non-infringement as well, based upon the court's construction of the preventing function of the claim. The court found that the preventing function required the blocking of all international calls if the third series of digits indicates that the call is international. This ruling was based upon the extensive prosecution record and Mr. Gamino's statements before the Patent Office as to the way his invention worked. Within the Patent Office record, there's some very clear statements from Mr. Gamino that if the telephone call includes digits in the third plurality that indicate the call is international, the call should be blocked. Well, on that basis, the court did reach the proper ruling that the preventing function does in fact require the blocking of all international calls.
You would agree with me that, I'm sure, neither the spec nor the claim convey the notion that all international calls must be blocked, right? You're relying exclusively, my understanding is, on the statements in the prosecution history.
I would draw your attention, however, to the table in column 5. The table in column 5 includes variants of calls that are going to be blocked under his scheme. And what you'll notice is what follows the table is this phrase: if entered into a telecommunications device which is not in accordance with present invention, these particular sequences allow an individual who has fraudulently obtained a calling card number to place long distance or telephone calls without authorization.
But at the top it says, in an exemplary embodiment of the present invention. So it's not, the claims clearly don't require all international blocking,
they don't,
right?
Use the word all.
Okay. So the claims don't require it. So then if you want to turn to the spec, our language is clear. It basically has to be a clear and unmistakable disclaimer to have us read a limitation into the spec, to the claim, which is not otherwise there. I struggle with how column 5 could amount to such a thing.
Oh, a disclaimer?
A clear and unmistakable disclaimer.
I agree. This doesn't qualify.
Okay, so then that's off the table. So then let's look at the prosecution history. What is it in the prosecution history that you think you can point me to that amounts to a clear and unmistakable disclaimer of the prevention of all, that requires the prevention of all calls?
Well, let's start with some of the examples where he told the examiner exactly how his invention worked. And one good example to start with is found in APP 3078. Thank you.
repeat that number?
APP 3078.
Thank you.
At APP 3078 in paragraph 2, and this is a declaration that is attached to an appellate brief, not the appellate brief, I'm sorry, the brief that was submitted as part of the appeal in the PTO. Mr. Gamino writes, my invention involves the entering of digits which are grouped into three separate groupings. If the digits in the third plurality of digits are digits which are used for international dialing, then the call is prevented. This statement is made across the two applications a total of 6 times. I would next turn the panel to APP 3016.
Just so you know, counsel, a little later in that same paragraph, he's explaining that this is the invention he has installed in the Port Authority bus terminal. We know that that invention blocked all international calls.
Right.
But why should we extrapolate from a discussion of the invention that he inserted someplace that all claim that all that the claims we should read a limitation in that all claims must block all calls?
Well, he refers to it as my invention. He's not talking here about what occurred at the Port Authority. He's using the Port Authority, however, to buttress the value of his invention. And I will agree, I'm not here to argue that Mr. Gamino did not make a contribution to the Port Authority, but what we have to recognize about his work at the Port Authority was that it succeeded because it blocked all international calls. And Mr. Gamino, during the course of prosecution, actually submitted news articles and internal memos from the Port Authority. Those news articles and internal memos describe the fact that all international calls were blocked. In fact, the memo from an individual named Ken Filmus at the Port Authority said that there is a small downside, a quote, small downside of Mr. Gamino's solution, and that no international calls can be made from the Port Authority bus terminal. It was a blanket solution that blocked everything. Did it prevent fraud? Absolutely, and I congratulate him for it, of course. But it did so by blocking all international calls. You simply could not make an international call.
Very well. Your time has expired. Thank you, Mr. Phil. Fulgham, I think I mispronounced your name earlier.
It's Fulgham.
Fulgham, very good. Mr. Mullen?
May I refer to visual aid?
You may, if you think it's useful to help you.
Yes.
And is this also an exhibit in the appendix?
Yes.
Thank you. Now I can see it.
Can you see it?
Yeah.
This goes to the question where SWB was in 1991. SWB in 1991, in a brief off the FCC, said that it was attempting to gather relevant data about the time frame and cost of developing software which might allow selective blocking of 10XXX. That's the Gamino patent, selective blocking 10XXX. November 5th, 91, Southwestern Bell admits they can't do the Gamino method.
Wait, that's not relating to the OnePlus and the local services. That's relating to one of the other services.
Selective blocking 10XXX, that's the exact same thing as the Gamino. That's not referring to local one or anything. That's just Southwestern Bell. It's telling the FCC what its capability is.
Right. What is this document that you took it from?
This is a Southwestern Bell brief filed with the FCC.
Regarding what?
Regarding what the requirements would be for SWB to provide international call block. And they were against it. They didn't want to do it. Despite the fact that they had told you that they were already up and running in 91, in that brief, the document 1956, they complained about the costs. They complained that they're not up and ready to do it. It's totally contrary to what Southwestern Bell has told you this morning what they could do in 1991. If you also take a look at a document at the record of 788, Southwestern Bell talking about international call blocking. It's described as direct dial call blocking. Customer owned payphone says, since this service is not in existence today, actual tariff data was not available to these inputs. That's in May. Again, in May, they're telling us they could provide international call blocking. It was not in existence at that date. And it continued as of November 5th. It was not in existence. This whole prior art is just something they've come up with because they had to file some documents with the FCC and the Texas Public Utilities Commission. if you take a look at that evidence, I think you'll have to conclude that they did not have prior art that could invalidate. Surely they couldn't prove it by clear and convincing evidence, which obviously is the standard on anticipation. It's just simply not there. It didn't exist.
They say, since this service is not in existence today, actual traffic data was not available for these inputs. Why isn't that more properly construed in light of the entire document as saying, look, we aren't actually using this service, but we're offering it for sale?
Well, my point on that, this is a Southwestern Bell document filed in public. They provided no testimony to dispute this.
When something is offered for sale, is it your belief that it has to actually be utilized in the commercial market for an offer to sale to constitute invalidating prior art?
No.
So,
they could offer
an offer for sale of something that is otherwise ready for patenting, even though it hasn't been physically built or commercially used, can still invalidate.
If it's ready for patenting, yes, that could invalidate.
So as long as it's ready for patenting, it can invalidate. Okay.
We haven't seen any of that evidence. You don't see the evidence that goes contrary to the statement's not in existence.
Sure you do. You see something at the Texas PUC that says it's in existence.
You don't see any evidence they blocked the call, that they showed you a formula as to how they blocked the call.
Why do they have to show you a formula? Gamino doesn't do that in his patent disclosure.
Sure he does. Gamino says he goes through it. Claim one.
But why wouldn't one of ordinary skill in the art know, as he suggested, the important thing is to identify which numbers you need to focus on. Blocking them then is easy. Why wouldn't that be the case?
AT&T tried to do it in 1991. They knew block 10XXX011. They couldn't solve port authority. It takes more than that. Gamino came up with using predetermined digits. I keep on saying that. Southwestern Bell had nothing like that. Southwestern Bell had nothing like that. If you look at the patents, it was also blocking based on the first plurality. We're talking about a much more detailed thing.
Don't you think their present invention does it based on predetermined digits?
No.
Wait, you're accusing it of infringement. And if you're saying
the present invention, yes.
Okay. So your belief then, your entire case hinges on whether the prior art was the same as the present invention, because your belief is that the present invention, the present thing that they sell, the local and OnePlus blocking services that they currently offer, the ones you've accused of infringement, do it according to Gamino's claims.
They absolutely can't do it.
So the whole thing comes down to whether that's what they were offering for sale in 1991.
It comes down to, if they prove by clear and convincing evidence they were doing the exact same thing back in 1991, yes, then it's invalid. But they didn't prove it.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Miller.
I know I'm taking all my time, but I didn't have a chance to talk about all the international calls. If I could take 30 seconds.
What do you mean, all the international calls?
Well, the argument by Mr. Folgerman, the fact that there was no infringement because they didn't block all international calls.
Well, all right. Why don't you take 30 seconds on that?
My biggest point on that is he read some of the prosecution history. If you take a look at our brief, there's as many statements in the prosecution history that are talking about selective enforcement. There's also a lot of the things that Southwestern Bell cites to, Mr. Gamino, if you read the whole text of it, deny that that was the fact. So some of the things that he's claiming that that Mr. Gamino said just isn't true. I just want to point that out, that there is a big difference on our interpretation of prosecution history than Southwestern Bell.
Okay. Thank you. The case is submitted.